This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on a Thursday afternoon. It is January 6, 2022. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart on the Noon Business Hour. Some of the gadgets on display at this week's Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas are the tech equivalent of comfort food. We'll learn more about them in our next segment. Right now, the latest numbers on jobless claims are out as we digest the minutes from the latest meeting of the Federal Reserve. We're joined by David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors and author of the book Understanding Central Banking, based in Denver, Colorado. David, thank you for joining us today. Yesterday, you could really tell when those minutes came out because the markets went from hovering around the flat line to plummeting rapidly in the last 90 minutes of trading. So my question for you, at least when it comes to not only just understanding central banking, but understanding what they're thinking, is how much of a surprise, when does a surprise become too much of a surprise?
Well, you just defined it perfectly. Those minutes that were released yesterday were the minutes of that meeting back in mid-December. And there was a hint in that meeting and the press conference after it that the Fed was getting more hawkish, meaning the Fed was getting ready to fight inflation, which is too widespread and too persistent, and was worrying a little bit less, at least, about the latest strain of the virus. What the minutes said, in effect, is we're going all out in that fight against inflation, and that jolted the stock market. Two things really hurt. One was the Fed said we're going to start reducing our huge balance sheet, which amounts to $9 trillion. Think of this. Before the credit crisis of 2007-2009, the balance sheet was less than $1 trillion. Now it's $9 trillion, and it's added hugely to market liquidity and a lot of speculation. And so the Fed said we're going to reduce that balance sheet. That surprised the market very much. And secondly, they said, look out, we may in fact increase interest rates more than expected this year. The market was looking for 3 rate hikes. I'm making a bet on the possibility we could get 6 or 7 rate hikes this year, one at every single policy meeting.
And then when it comes to reducing the balance sheet, you know, for laymen who hear that term and just don't know what it means, how will the Fed reduce its balance sheet over the course of 2022?
Well, in essence, the Fed is holding a lot of securities. They've been buying huge amounts of securities to keep the market calm and to provide enough liquidity. When the Fed holds Treasury securities and mortgage-backed securities in that balance sheet, the way they let that balance sheet decline is letting those securities mature without replacing them. And that means when the balance sheet falls, there's less market liquidity. And when there's less market liquidity, there's less money to buy stocks. And if the Fed starts letting that balance sheet fall faster than the street thinks it was going to do, that means trouble for the stock market, which is exactly what happened. So when you combine a declining Fed balance sheet, it does sound technical, but it's very important. It's the source of really all the liquidity we have in the economy. When they start reducing that and at the same time raising interest rates more than expected, that was inevitably going to cause a shock to the stock market. And I don't think that shock is over yet.
Thanks for joining us. David Jones, Chairman DMJ Advisors in Denver, Colorado. Coming up, checking out some of the hot devices at the Consumer Electronics Show, including the next generation TV.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Some of the gadgets on display at this week's Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas are the tech equivalent of comfort food, which is a very interesting piece of terminology to help us define comfort food or tech comfort food. We welcome in Jennifer Jolly, Tech Life columnist for USA Today, founder and editor-in-chief of techish.com, following the Consumer Electronics Show remotely today because the CES, although it's in Las Vegas, many years ago it used to be in Chicago, but it's in Las Vegas, but a lot of vendors and a lot of people following it are now doing so remotely because of the Omicron variant of COVID-19. So Jennifer, thank you for joining us today. When we say tech comfort food, what are you talking about?
Well, I will admit I made that term up when I went hands-on with a bunch of the latest gadgets debuting at this year's CES 2022. It's like it's just like comfort food, but gadgets. It's what you know, it's what you love, but slightly tweaked to make you feel even better about all the time that we're spending with them. So case in point here, Lenovo's latest ThinkPad Z13, it's really top of the line laptop for the Zoom generation. So reimagined for the Zoom generation in a more hybrid workforce. The communication bar at the top of the screen allows for a larger camera, dual array microphones, Dolby Voice and Atmos speaker system, delivering really immersive audio. And then this year, a lot of the companies said, hey, we're doubling down on tech to save the planet. So stain-resistant, recycled, black vegan leather top, 75% recycled aluminum body. So we're just seeing things just tweaked to make us just kind of relax into using them in the year forward.
So in other words, when you're on a Zoom call and you're saying, am I on mute? Am I on mute? It's going to be a Dolby immersive blockbuster movie style experience.
Yeah, and there's even AI being built into our best tech, so it'll help you figure that out so you don't get surprised as much. Case in point for that one, LG's G2 OLED Evo G series. I mean, these guys have been winning awards for their TVs forever, but this year they really present that pinnacle of OLED tech. It's the brand's brightest, most advanced 4K picture quality to date. It's really like bringing a cinema into your home, astonishing amounts of contrast and jaw-dropping color gamut. But then they're using AI to enhance image and sound quality to detect and enhance faces and objects. That's the first time we've seen that. And they just dropped the world's first 97-inch OLED, because I guess there are times when bigger really is better.
in case you want to have a Jumbotron in your living room.
97 inches, and the perfect distance to be away from a screen that you're watching is 2 times that. So seriously, who has space that big in their house?
However, at the same time, a friend of mine, his dad got a 65-inch HD TV to watch the Super Bowl, the Bears Super Bowl in 2007, which at the time seemed excessive, but now it's the base model you see when you walk into Costco.
Yeah, now you can get those for, I don't know, $100, $150 on Black Friday. Yeah, that's crazy. The other thing that we're seeing, a kind of first from this year, Samsung's never launched a phone, but they did this year at CES. It's the Galaxy S21 FE 5G. FE stands for Fan Edition because they polled their fans, what are their favorite phone features, and then they combined them into a bit less expensive Fan Edition. What's cool about this, 6.4-inch dynamic display, flagship processing power, pro-grade camera system, including the ability to record on the front and rear cameras at the same time. They call that the director's cut, and that's just really cool. And this is on sale really soon, January 11th, just under $700.
Thank you very much, Jennifer Jolly, Tech Life columnist for USA Today and founder and editor-in-chief for techish.com. Coming up next, Taco Bell launches a new Taco a Day subscription program.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words, this is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Taco Bell is debuting a new program designed to drive more frequent visits by customers. Let's get the details from RJ Hadavi, head of analytical research at the foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI, based in Chicago. RJ, thanks for joining us today. Is it safe to call this a taco subscription program?
Yeah, I think that's the right way to look at it. And it's something that we're seeing more and more across the quick service restaurant space. You got it right. I mean, the primary goal of this program is to drive greater frequency. And what's interesting to us, we've been tracking foot traffic across a lot of quick service restaurants. And generally speaking, traffic is still down. Visits are down compared to 2019. But with fewer restaurant options out there, we're actually seeing more unique customers come to restaurants. So there's an opportunity if you can grab these unique customers that are coming in for the first time or the first time in a long time and create greater frequency. I think that's really what's driving it. The other thing too is that these largely tied to the QSR company's apps. And so I think this is a greater way for them to get engagement through that digital platform and potentially open up some new marketing opportunities as well. But I think calling it a subscription plan is the right way to think about it.
$10 a month and you can order four different types of tacos. One per day for 30 days straight on the chain's app, no matter where depending on where you are and the closest restaurant to you. But this isn't the first idea of its type. Panera and Burger King have tried similar concepts with coffee.
Yeah, that's where we've seen most of these subscription and kind of repeat visit type platforms work most. And it makes sense because, you know, coffee platforms, you're going to typically visit a Starbucks or a Dunkin' or Panera for coffee more often than you would for, you know, a traditional quick service restaurant. So that's why we've seen it in coffee first. But this is it's interesting to start to see it, across other categories. Sweetening, for example, the salad-based chain just introduced a subscription platform as well. And so we're starting to see more and more of it. And I think just shows you that this space has gotten a lot more competitive. We've seen fewer competitors, although probably not as many closures as we expected coming out of COVID. But it's gotten more competitive. There's been industry consolidation, and you have to find a way to keep people coming back in. And so this is one way potentially to lock in consumers with these kind of platforms.
How quickly have apps and rewards programs taken over the quick service restaurant space?
I'd say it's been slow and somewhat mixed. There's been some successes and some programs that have had to be retooled. It's one of those cases where, as I mentioned, coffee is done okay because that is typically something where you see a lot of visits. Some cases you can see upwards of 200, 250 visits a year for some of the most loyal customers for some of these chains. In the quick service space, where it's typically more of a once or twice a month type transaction, it's been a little bit tougher to catch on. But I think what we're starting to see with digital ordering becoming so prevalent during the pandemic, I think that that's given a lot of these chains an opportunity to revisit the platforms and understand what consumers really want from them, what kind of offers, and how to better tailor marketing events to those. So I think we're going to see more and more of these type of opportunities too. And it's especially if it's a case too, like Starbucks, where you can preload a lot of the funds ahead of time into the mobile app. I think that that's a very attractive proposition for a lot of restaurant chains too. So we'll probably see more of that in the years to come.
Thanks a lot, RJ Hadavi, head of analytical research at the foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI, based in Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. President Biden marking the anniversary of the assault in the U.S. Capitol by supporters of former President Trump, saying democracy was attacked. A special report coming up from CBS News. Technology Thursday, tracking the amazing advances in automotive tech on display at this year's Consumer Electronics Show. And younger workers may be missing a lot by not going into the office. Bears quarterback Justin Fields placed in the team's COVID reserve list. WBBM Business, the markets are mixed right now. The Dow is down 108 points. The NASDAQ is up 6. The S&P 500 is up 4. AccuWeather says times of sun and clouds, a biting cold wind. We have 12 degrees right now in Chicago at 12:31.
CBS News Special Report. President Biden marked 1 year since the January 6th assault on the U.S. Capitol with a fiery speech at the site of the insurrection. He rebuked the violence and former President Trump's attempts to overthrow the 2020 election that made Mr. Biden president.
They failed. On this day of remembrance, we must make sure that such attack never, never happens again.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says not much has changed when it comes to those looking to wreak havoc.
The attacks on our democracy are ongoing. If not by the force of baseball bats and pipe bombs, then certainly through a quieter and much more organized effort to subvert democracy from the bottom up.
Political analyst of the University of Virginia, Larry Sabato.
I doubt it will affect any of the pro-Trump people. They made up their minds a long time ago, and they believe Trump's lies.
Trump, in a statement, still calling it a rigged election. CBS News Special Report. I'm Matt Piper.
It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are mixed today. We're joined by Vahan Janjigian, Chief Investment Officer of Greenwich Wealth Management, based in Greenwich, Connecticut. Thank you for joining us today. The notion of the Federal Reserve raising interest rates in 2022 was not exactly a surprise. And yet, when those Fed minutes came out yesterday from their meeting in mid-December, investors had a little bit of a panic attack yesterday afternoon. They were concerned just about the rate of, or the speed at which the Federal Reserve wanted to raise rates.
Hi, Rob. Yes, you're right. That was one of the concerns. But I think a bigger concern is that the Fed has talked about tapering its bond purchases, which means that it's going to reduce the amount of bonds that it buys in addition to these interest rate hikes. But this was the first time that we saw a formal mention of the possibility that the Fed may actually sell bonds and reduce the size of its balance sheet. And I think that's what really worried investors. I think everybody understood that the Fed was going to start increasing the Fed funds rate. The first rate hike is expected in March. Everybody understood that the bond purchases would be tapered, but I don't think people really expected the Fed to reduce the size of its balance sheet, and it probably won't until the very end of this year. So I think yesterday's sell-off was a bit of an overreaction.
And when they talk about, I mean, even with the interest rates were inevitable, but so was the tapering as well. And you mentioned this little bit of an overreaction, but especially for something that, as you say, may not even happen in 2022.
That's right. Well, the rate hikes will happen, but the sale or the reduction of the balance sheet, as you pointed out, will probably not happen in 2022, or if it does, at the very end of the year. However, the fact remains that the stock market has done incredibly well for a prolonged period of time. And I think people were looking for excuses to sell. There are a lot of overvalued stocks out there, especially in the technology sector. We're into January. So now if people sell today, they don't have to worry about paying the taxes on those sales for another year. So I think it makes sense that we saw some of this profit taking, especially in those overvalued sectors. There are a lot of other sectors, however, that remain very undervalued. In fact, today we see that the greatest strength in the stock market is coming from the Russell 2000, an index of small cap stocks, while the Dow is, you know, the Dow is down and the S&P is relatively flat. So there are places to go, and I think a rotation is taking place. People are starting to realize that it makes sense to take profits in overvalued names and perhaps start loading up on some of these cheaper stocks.
I mean, obviously, if you are in the market, you want to limit your exposure as much as you can and reacting to events in real time. But the fact that the Fed is both tapering and talking about raising interest rates after this aggressive bond buying program to rescue the economy nearly 2 years ago is a sign that the economy writ large is doing fairly well.
Yes, that's right. The economy is doing very well. We see that in a number of measures. You know, I think GDP growth has been a little bit weaker than I would have liked. But if you look at the labor market's doing absolutely great. We recently saw that the quits rate is way up. This means that people are voluntarily quitting their jobs. And of course, you know, nobody does that unless they have something better to do. So I think the economy is doing quite well. And I think, you know, as I said, I think yesterday's reaction was a bit of an overreaction to rising rates. In fact, I was looking at some research just before I got on from Strategus Research Partners that shows that the stock market on average has gone up about 8% in the first 6 months after the first rate increase. So I think there's really no reason to get overly fearful of a rate increase.
Jobs, a report comes out tomorrow. Very quickly, how do you think the markets will react, especially if the BLS number is significantly lower than the ADP number released earlier this week?
Well, I'm actually more concerned that it might be significantly better. If it's extremely strong, that could be bad news for stocks because that pretty much guarantees that the Fed will start raising rates.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Vahan Janjigian, Chief Investment Officer, Greenwich Wealth Management, based in Greenwich, Connecticut. Coming up next in Technology Thursday, the annual CES show in Las Vegas this week features some of the latest innovations for vehicles.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday, and there's a lot of automotive action at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. Let's learn more from John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv, based in Detroit. John, thanks for joining us today. Before we go into some of the eye-popping features that are on display or being talked about at CES this week, especially the color-changing car, it really does sound like the automotive industry has its really making its mark at CES. And is this always been the case, or is this a recent trend?
No, it's a recent trend, Rob. You know, years ago when I first came to CES, all the automotive technologies was it was audio. It was woofers and tweeters and fancy speaker grills. It was, you know, nothing like it is today. But with the advent of electric cars, autonomous cars, connected cars, boy, I'd say automotive is practically stealing the headlines at the show here.
And let's talk about BMW. Their entry into CES is a color-changing car. So if your family, you or your spouse or your kids all have a disagreement over what color that new car should be, you can change that with the push of a button. Tell us about that.
Well, to be honest, I don't know a whole lot about it. I know it's here. I've been looking at so many other technologies. I haven't gotten to that. You know, it's still the morning here in Las Vegas, so I will get to that today. But you're right. You can push a button and change the color of your car. That's all I can tell you about it right now, and hopefully I can follow up with more details later.
And then infrared cameras, and that's especially would be especially relevant to drivers in a day like today in Chicago, where we have temperatures right now, a very balmy 12 degrees at O'Hare and a wind chill of 3 below, and that leads to rather interesting pavement conditions. This infrared camera would be helpful to drivers who are dealing with ice and snow.
Exactly right. So infrared, it's amazing. If a road is completely covered in snow, the infrared doesn't even know the snow's there. It can see exactly where the road is, and it can display that for you. So it looks to you like you're just driving along a snowy road. This makes sure you stay on the road. But even beyond that, at nighttime, it can see pedestrians or dogs or any other kind of thing. So it's a real safety plus. This is technology, by the way, from a company called Adasky that's out of Israel.
Gentex has this driver and cabin monitor for the occupants of the car. What kind of information is it looking for?
Yeah, Gentex is a company based in Holland, Michigan, that they're experts in mirrors. They do all kinds of cool stuff. So one of the things is they've got a camera in the rearview mirror of the car, so that you can take a selfie of yourself while you're driving down the road, and you can use the forward camera to capture where you're driving. Let's say, just for example, you're driving through Death Valley and you want to show your friends that you're going through this beautiful landscape. It will capture that, it will take a selfie of you, and it will post it to social media automatically. And one of the reasons they're doing this, of course, is to reduce driver distraction. But it turns out in China, lots of people love to take selfies of themselves while they're driving, and as we know, that's just not a safe thing to do. So that's another cool technology we saw here.
So, like I said, this does reduce a certain level of driver hazard. And then just in general, and as far as the car technology is concerned, you mentioned there's definitely an automotive industry takeover at CES in recent years. Does it surprise you that more tech companies that were displaying the woofers and tweeters at CES about a decade ago are now deciding to kick the tires on building cars themselves? For example, Sony.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it? Sony's thinking about getting into the automotive business. We would have never thought about something like that, two or three years ago. So, look, the tech business, Silicon Valley is hyper-focused on automotive right now. They see enormous growth opportunities, and we're seeing a real synergy between traditional automotive and bleeding-edge tech.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv based in Detroit. Join us at this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. And still to come, the impact of working from home on younger workers.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Younger people entering the workforce in the past 2 years have likely had a much different experience than the others who came on the job before them due to the remote workplace. Let's talk about that with Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm 2Discern, based in Chicago. Rick, thanks for joining us today. It sounds like an entry on the Beloit College mindset list, where you talk about the class of 2020, and that many of whom may not have actually set foot in an office, or very rarely, since they got their first full-time job out of school.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. I know of several situations where people have been actually recruited away, gone through the process, gone through orientation, and been working in a company for a year and never actually have been in the building.
It seems like there's a push-pull type of situation here where you have remote work as a benefit in this very tight labor market, something you can negotiate as part of your compensation, and yet it's beneficial, especially if you're a brand new worker, to actually, see your coworkers face-to-face.
Yeah, and that has to be communicated. There's certainly a huge loss of legacy information and knowledge and experience by not being in the organization interpersonally. There are things that happen, across the lunchroom and water cooler that are useful to know, and there's a way to build relationships. And we understand that people ultimately don't quit. They quit their boss, and certainly the millennial and the younger generation quit or are less interested if they don't feel like they're making a contribution and are recognized and valued. So the traditional model of, we hire you, you go through some training, and a couple of years from now, we might pay attention to you. That has to change in order to keep those people, because otherwise your retention numbers for that population are going to go the wrong direction. And my recommendation would be to create programs and interests for that population onboarding that appeal to them, not necessarily directly to the organization. Certainly it should be a benefit for you. And one of the things that you might consider is taking a couple layers out of access out of your company, so that the new person isn't only reporting to a person one level senior of them, but actually has access to people who are farther up the chain and have more experience, and to put programs in place that show we care about you, we want you involved, and we're going to help you become better at this job and the next one ahead of it.
And this seems like this also seems like less of a employee issue, but also a managerial issue, that everything that you as a manager may have learned about keeping an office together, you have to throw out that playbook and almost write a new one for the remote work generation.
Yeah, you really do. And I think that that's true up and down the organization. And it's particularly true in manufacturing environments, which seems kind of counterintuitive when you have to show up and work on the machines and work on the line to stay, but you can't, if you're treated as a cog, the market's good enough, you can walk across the street and get a different job. So it's about, what does this person care about? Why would they want to stay here? And how can I make that part of our culture so that they will stay and feel valued and also learn? And that's going to be really tough on a Zoom call. And I think small, intimate environment, one-on-one, more direct access to senior people in the organization, and more sort of onboard online coaching of those people about how can you be better at what you're doing and demonstrate that you care about them. It happens to be a win-win because companies that do that tend to be the most profitable in their sector.
Thanks for joining us today. Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm 2Discern, based in Chicago. If you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and just skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function that works both online and with the Odyssey app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.